This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Terry Green Band, Celeste Terrell, the Texas Dub Crusaders, John Hogan. For more information about South by Due East 2009, check out www.southbydueast.com.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbian, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Well, indeed it is. We are kind of jackless this evening.
Without our Jack, yes.
That's right, yeah.
I'm sure he's listening out there, though.
Yes.
I'm sure he is. My name is Glenn.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And on the show this evening, what's like the Academy Awards, but benefits local charities such as PWA Coalition, Names Project, Stone Soup, and others? It's the annual Diana Foundation Awards, the oldest community roast in the nation. We'll discuss this year's event with the organizers. Then in News Wrap, from This Way Out, there's lots of things happening in the world, the wide world of GLBT news, including New York City's landmark Oscar Wilde Bookshop and Los Angeles's A Different Light Bookstore. They're both closing their doors. Back to local stuff, the Montrose Softball League has an end-of-season awards banquet coming up, and we will visit with Commissioner Bill Sansom about the MSL, its charitable activities, and the banquet. In our second hour, the second annual Une Soirée Pelouse in Wonderland. It's a fundraising event benefiting Assist-Hers and the Houston Buyers Club. Mark Garcia will join us to talk about their events, and then followed by David Felton of Gay Houston Bowling League to talk about the GLBT bowling scene in Houston. And we have This Way Out's feature presentation. Greg Gordon recalls his interview 31 years ago with newly elected San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk and comments on how much of it sounds like it could be happening today.
This is Jennifer Renee and Brian. We've got John Heinzingler.
Heinzerling. Yes.
Boy, I want to tell you, I've been working on that name and I blew it anyway.
Well, you have
and
to have
Michael
a...
Kemper is here with the Diana Foundation. And I have to admit that I'm about as old as the Diana Foundation, but I don't know much about it. I need to know some stuff. Tell me something about the Diana Foundation.
Well, this is Michael Kemper, and I'm going to talk about the fact that we are the oldest gay men's women's roast in the United States at 56 years old. And when it started, it was literally just off the Academy Awards, and it started in people's homes. Actually, our founder was Charles Hebert, and it started in his home, and they excuse me, roasted each other. And it grew from in the 50s to by the time it was in the mid-60s that we were in clubs and realized we had the power of raising money. And it went from that to the early 70s in hotels, in the Sheraton Hotel downtown. And that was when we did realize we were raising lots of money. So in the beginning, when we realized this, we were putting kids through college from the High School of the Performing Arts, gay kids. Mm-hmm. And we kept four kids in college at one time. So when one graduated, another one got on. So we literally put a lot of young gay people through college that would not have had the money to do so.
Now, how did, and back in the 50s and 60s, how was the climate and how did you identify these people? I mean, I'm sure it was a lot less open.
Well, it wasn't open at all. I mean, as far as the shows we put on and the roast and the raising the money, that was still very private, as I say. To get to go to the Sheraton Hotel downtown and actually the heterosexual world was a huge thing at the time. Now, as far as knowing whether the kids were gay or not, you know, the educational system is like any other. Mm-hmm. And your teachers...
everybody
were
knows,
there.
Don't
yeah,
they?
Everybody knows.
Billy's a special boy.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. So we were able to do it through that. And then, of course, when AIDS came and HIV, the entire thing changed. And not only did it change who we were giving our money to, it changed our organization as it changed the rest of the gay world. And we then went to raising money, and we've always just been a broker of money, if you will. We've never controlled any organization except our own, and we just broker the money. So starting in the 80s, we basically raised the seed money for every AIDS organization that exists in the city at the time, and now through all the merging today. So whether it was the Assistance League or Omega House or Stone Soup or Pet Patrol, any of that, we originally started the money, and that's just what we have done for the last 56 years.
That's absolutely amazing. You have a history that
predates
it predates Stonewall or Compton's Cafeteria. It is it's a time a bit of history that probably many of us in the community today had no idea of what you had to go through and what you were doing. And I can only imagine those early years, how secretive it had to be.
Oh, unbelievable. Even
have a secret handshake?
Yeah, yes. even until about not quite a decade ago, I personally was very blessed that Phil Poplin, one of my best friends, he and I co-hosted this Black Tie event for 18 years. And in that 18 years, we raised $1,600,000. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot today, but the largest check we got was $1,000.
Back in those days,
you didn't get Continental Airlines and banks and big corporations to come forward and say, we'll underwrite $20,000 worth of something. So no, people, it really truly was an incredible feat, as well as it was the only gay organization, and a lot of the organizations that exist today or have come and gone were splinters of the Diana Foundation. Excuse me.
When you talk about that, we've got so many organizations here in Houston now, that, and many of them come on the show, we interview them, and we talk about the things they're doing, and it's phenomenal that we have y'all here to know that it started somewhere.
It was a start. And as I say, those, like any organization, I don't care who you are, if it goes long enough, you have splits. You have people who are unhappy.
That's true.
So, truly, Miss Camp America, Crew of Olympus, Christmas in July, all were people who once split and started their own organizations.
That's pretty incredible. And
Mr. John.
Yes.
You're awfully quiet. You know, as the president, I would expect that you would be vocal.
Sometimes I am. I think the one thing that we just kind of glossed over was that this organization started just as a group of friends back, I believe, 1952. It was actually organized. 1953 was the first show. And it was just a group of friends who wanted to spoof the Oscars.
Which is a natural gay thing
which
to do.
Is, that's but in the
perfect.
50s, you have
we do that today.
They were, they were doing it at somebody's home out in front of the garage. Just
so this was before
8 or 10 of them.
Of course, this is before the internet, before gay bars.
Right.
This is before all that. How did you find each other?
This was a little before me.
We really have not been members
even
all
me.
These years.
You don't look in your 70s, no.
I think it was just, it's just what Michael talked about in finding gay students. I mean, you just, you know.
Kind of know that.
Kind of know, and there's
Billy's
the
light.
Old gaydar deal.
Yeah,
well, you were saying that y'all roast. Now, okay, where you...
It's always been a roast from the very, very beginning.
Well, who do you decide to roast?
We go by that through the years, and that, of course, has also changed because, as I go back to, HIV changed a lot.
Changed everything.
Everything. So, in the beginning, it was about, if you will, making sure everybody knew that they weren't better than somebody else.
Taking down people a notch or two.
Yes.
Oh, do you have a suggestion, Brian?
You mean of a part?
I mean, you know, we've always had best supported actress.
Oh my God!
Which is an easy award.
I bet it is.
Yes, it is. Very easy award.
And so it's just anybody in our community or organizations in our community, or does it go beyond that?
I think it's centered in the organization, but we have certainly stepped outside of our organization. situation numerous times. So,
In the beginning days, it was anybody was a target.
Okay.
And then it did become, as, and I hate to go back to, but with HIV, they became where you really didn't want to have anything scathing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you really didn't want to go, I mean, things became so much more serious. So we then just roasted from within ourselves.
Okay.
So as a member, we still on occasion, if something really stands out that maybe we have to mention it, you know, it would go back to the, when Mayor Welch, you know, Mike was open on Channel 13 and, you know, said for us to all kill the queers. Well, you know, we would have to roast him for that these days.
I remember that.
Yes,
yeah, I remember that fewer that came up.
So, there are times we do step out and make sure that he probably would have gotten best picture.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, you mentioned the organization. How does one join if they're interested these days? Or what's the process?
Well,
John?
Basically,
Mr. President.
Yeah, basically, we are looking for people just as anyone else. We have a maximum number of people in the organization of 100.
Okay.
We're down in the 60s right now.
Okay.
And actually, we've come back quite a bit in the last 3 or 4 years to get up to the 60s. So we're rising again. We're also perhaps going a little younger, which is something that I think the most organizations, especially one that's been around for 56 years, needs to be able to do. So we're just, as far as looking for people, we don't really look. They come from friends,
mm-hmm.
Those that others know within the organization, anybody that was, I can't remember when we had anybody apply that wasn't known. They have to come to a couple of events before they're eligible. They have to do some work before they're eligible.
Mm-hmm.
But
so tell me,
not that
besides
hard.
The roast, what other events do you have?
We have in the fall, our other big event is called, or has been called, the Country Dinner. This year it was the Roundup Weekend. We actually went to a 3-day event. Those are the two events that we choose our charities for the whole year. This year, the Pet Patrol and Bering Omega Community Services, as Michael said earlier, both charities that we went back to that have grown significantly. Bering, as you all know, particularly is a very large organization now, but that we provided seed money for back in the 80s.
Hmm.
And we go back to them, and then we, you know, next year it'll be somebody else. But the two events that we provide the funds come from are the Country Dinner Roundup Weekend and the award show, which provides easily the lion's share of what we give away each year.
What sort of awards do y'all give away?
Awards?
This goes back to the roast.
We're still doing the roast.
We give best picture, best supported actress, best supported actor, and as I say, always best actress in a supported role.
No.
Yes. Well, yeah, and again, so we do that, and then through the years, we give the Diana Award, which is not given every year. It is only given at special occasions, i.e. back when Kathy Whitmer was mayor, we honored her. We have honored several politicians through the years, as well as philanthropists in the city, Carolyn Farr. And so,
Deborah Danberg.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just when we say the awards, it's... And our whole event has changed. Back in the 70s, 80s, and the beginning of the 90s, we were still doing a full-blown production. It was basically a cabaret with awards like the Academy Awards. I mean, we had musical, we had numbers, we had the Swallowettes, we had different groups that came out and did numbers, and we had our own orchestra that everybody was gay, a 56, 70 piece, according to the year, orchestra. We played all our own songs. The head of the ballet at the time did all the choreography, and we had people who tried out. So we did a huge production, made our own sets, did all our own costumes. At one time, the organization owned 11 sewing machines that people would sew. We had...
We had
100 members and 200 people that were pledging in those years before HIV. And then when HIV came, and AIDS absolutely devastated...
Devastated our community.
Not only did it it take, it took the people. And so it took the talent, it took the people who did things, and it's hard when you lose that generation. You know, everything is about teaching, if you will. Yeah. And when you can't pass on that thespian, just as y'all are in the radio world, to let someone see what it is and do it. So when the theater passes and there's no one to see and bring through, there's just two generations that die. The young mm-hmm. people have really never done it. A 25-year-old or a 30-year-old, unless they were in that part of the world and they're education, haven't just come in and pulled a curtain or learned how to paint a set. So we did create an incredible outlet at the time in the community for people to be able to be involved to make the event happen. Mm-hmm. And we're down to that. And we brought in always famous entertainers. Madam. Back when, and we've brought in a lot of entertainers from New York, even recently, and L.A. that we usually have. This year we're trying something totally different.
Yeah, tell us about this.
Good
year.
Segue.
It's at the zoo.
It's at the zoo.
Or are they going to be zoo animals?
We're at the zoo.
There has been that question,
and we're very excited about it. And we've been everywhere from downtown at the biggest theaters to the Tower to the Wortham. I mean, so this is another thing that we're really not doing. The basic cabaret event. We're having a petting, a cocktail hour where they're going to bring pets out. And I mean, zoo animals are really no one's pet. But to me, it's like they're pets to pet. And then we have a great event with the sea lions that they're going to do a show. And then we're having a dinner dance. And so we're trying to create something that's a little different and that'll give people back to that feeling of, if you will, cocktails and dinner.
Okay, so let's get some of the details of this for our listeners. John, Mr. President.
And if you, however, the awards will still be there.
Okay.
They will be a part of this cocktail hour. So details is in terms of...
When is this Saturday? What time?
It is this coming Saturday, the 21st of March, beginning at 7:30
mm-hmm.
at the Houston Zoo. The entry is the main gate.
Main gate.
And... It'll be from 7 to 11:30. There'll be a silent auction. There will be, as I mentioned a minute ago, the awards that we've had for the last 56 years. There are just maybe a fewer of them this year. There will be cocktails, open bar, dinner, and dancing. So,
and John, who would they call?
Who would they call?
And what is that?
And what would the number be if they called?
The number would be 713-639-2000. And that is the Diana Foundation number. They'll get a voicemail, and we will be back on the phone to them before they know it.
Now, is this a black tie event?
It is a black tie event.
Okay.
And
now, is it outside? Are you going to get all mushy and all kind of humid and moist?
The one thing that we have been concerned about this entire event has been the weather.
Mm.
As best we can tell right now, the weather is going to be fine. And yes, it is outside around a reflection pool.
Okay.
And in the case of bad weather, we've got backup in a couple of the buildings out there. But we hope that it's going to be outside.
I know a lot of queens that do not want to get their black tie wet.
No.
Or even moist.
Please, no moist.
Please. No wet hair.
No moist.
Fallen.
No. Okay, so you have a backup plan.
Yes, which if necessary.
All great gay organizations always have a backup plan.
It's just down the path, but we'd rather not do it.
Well, if you think about yesterday for the AIDS walk, it was 40s and like raining cold, and today it's 80.
Yeah, no,
it's perfect. And like... Yeah, so
everything supposed to be in the 70s and not raining by Saturday.
70s, maybe low 60s for the evening,
which would be
fur coats come out
with black tie. It should be perfect.
Gay men in fur coats.
Yeah, well, imagine that.
Well, that might not be nice there with the zoo, and you have your fur coat.
That seems a little bit hypocritical.
Thank you for bringing that up. You are.
Fur people are people too.
Fur's murder. That's right. So how did y'all pick the zoo? I mean, that's a kind of an interesting venue.
Well, our chairman is Mark Wade.
Brown.
Mark Wade Brown.
Is that a hyphenated?
No,
he's got
three
hyphenated
names. He insists on the three names.
Yeah.
But Mark has chaired for the last 5 years, mm-hmm. and he's done a great job. And again, part of his belief was is that we needed a change, and we've been indoors, and we've done, like I say, we truly have been the Wortham, the Tower, hotels. Just about every venue in the city, stages.
Yeah.
And so, again, trying to recreate what would people like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel that overall, in events, people are probably a little tired of sitting in a ballroom and having the same type of food and having a little music and then people stop and talk and then a little more and then people stop and talk. And so what we're trying to create is a whole new experience for the gay world to get out and do to be able to obviously raise money for charity.
Very good.
And the zoo has done this before, so this is not a...
They do it every year. The big zoo ball.
Right. They have the big zoo ball outside.
So they're not, you know...
So this is not a big change for them. It is a change for us, for sure.
Now, is this open to the public? I saw something in Outsmart. I mean,
well, it's open. That's why I wanted to make sure we gave a phone number.
Okay.
No, you can't just walk up that evening.
Right. You need.
So you have to. You have to have your ticket.
You will need to have a ticket.
Is there a website also?
There is a website. The Dianas have finally come around, and we are organizing.
You're getting into the 21st century, eh?
I've been looking for a website for years.
There is a homepage that's active, but that's all. And it's thedianafoundation.org.
Well, good for you all.
But the phone number is 713-639-2000.
Yes.
Call for your tickets.
Ahead. There's no tickets at the door.
The night of.
There's no. You don't have to show a gay ID or anything.
No.
You can cards.
You can, but you do need to come, even with ticket, in a lovely gown and or a tuxedo.
Oh.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the beneficiaries. Those are?
Pet Patrol. And Baron Omega.
Two fine organizations.
Okay. Is there any of the awards? Is that all within your group that you do?
How do you pick those awards?
Yeah,
the awards.
I want to know how you get picked. We might want to recommend Brian.
Go right ahead.
Well,
no backstabbing.
There will be.
That was in the beginning. You're exactly
best supporting actress.
Correct. Is that people sent in to the organization ideas of who thought one should be roasted. Of course, also back in the early days, the community was small enough that when you went out on Sunday, there would be 200 people out, but you'd know 170 of them.
Right.
Right.
So, which now that you and I are of the age that we can remember that. But today you go out, it's just shattered, and you might not know anyone. So it's pretty well from within, and there has been this... if you, for no lack of a better word, a secret group that no one really knows who they exactly are, but they come up and they present the awards through a committee chairman that we do know who that chairman is, and then it's given to individuals actually that do not see them until the night before, and then they're delivered to to homes, and then they get to rehearse that evening and are sworn that if they let it out, they're in a lot of trouble.
A bunch of angry queens coming to your door.
Girl, don't want to do that. No. That would not be fun at all.
So it's likely there'll be both some in and some outside the organization this year.
Well, back in the 50s, Houston was a very small town.
Oh, yes.
I mean...
And again, when I'm not... I've been in the club 28 years. And like I say, I can go back to when it was just an unbelievable machinery, a piece of machine that raised money. And back in those days, the young kids today don't stop and think that, you know, you had to go to a door and an alley and knock.
Yeah.
And if whoever was looking through that peephole did not recognize you, or you were not with someone who they recognized, that door did not open.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right that the idea of back in the days that when we were raising the money, I mean, you had to be very careful that showing up to the Sheraton in your tuxedo in 1969 and 1970.
Well, you could get arrested in this
town. Arrested, as well as if someone saw
that's
you
that's
lose your job.
That's if all they did was arrest you.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, it was a very, but luckily enough, and this may sound a little bit on the snobbish side, but in the early days, there were several wealthy gay men who were a part of the organization. And that, you know, money always exempts some things, I hate to say. Hmm. But you did not have as, we really never experienced a lot of harassment. Because we were the upper echelon. It was the upper gay group, the, if you will, and that day it was the A crowd of the time in the 60s and 70s. And it still has we have some very important members in our organization in this city and that are have been very helpful to us.
Well, now we have elected officials. That
yes,
are,
yeah. Oh, these
and
days
judges.
And time, yes.
And,
yes. And, so, and it, you can actually say you're gay on radio.
Absolutely. Or queer.
Yeah. Now, we've talked about the past and kind of the present. What about the future for the Dianas? What do y'all see as the future?
Well, we're as demonstrated by this year, we're trying different things as far as the award show goes. And we don't, I mean, I think the awards themselves will always be a part of it. But we're just kind of feeling our way along to see what works.
And part of the future is, as John says, change. And part of that change is, and I think younger people are wanting to be involved, not only in raising money, but we have a social event every 4 to 5 weeks. We have approximately 9 parties a year. We have a black tie Christmas party that's very luxurious and a lot of fun to come to. And then we have socials in people's homes. And, you know, in this day and time, the younger people didn't do that. When I was young, that's the only place you had to go.
Right.
And so I think that that is evolving, that as John says, we're seeing 30, 35, 40-year-olds that think, you know, that's really a lot of fun to come to someone's lovely home and have cocktails on a Sunday afternoon or on a Saturday night from 7 to 11 and then go out. And it gives you the opportunity to stop and really talk to someone and know someone. Where when you just have bars to go to, as we all know, it's what's next.
Exactly.
Men de jour.
Yeah.
Well, and I see that even now. You know, the invitations that come, you know, come to me have been like that. We're getting together on Saturday night.
Right.
We're going to just a group of people, and you have a little snacks, and you talk, and you just visit. Which is very much a lost art.
Yeah, and I think as the economy changes, that's going to become, again, an art. And that it's something that we have been doing through the years. And that would be our if there is a new direction, is that we still want to raise money. And we have put in within our dues a percentage of the dues that goes straight to charity.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, as a member, if you're not someone who does like to get out and do extra to try to raise, we've eliminated that. You don't have to do anything. You just have to come to, you know, to the two main events. And most people love coming to the socials. I mean, we really have a good time, and as you say, laugh and giggle, and you get to stop and not be, it's a destination, if you will.
Well, in your big events, there's just not enough time available in a year to really dress to the nines and go to an event.
And we are a 501c3, and one of the reasons for doing the part of the dues going to, I mean, everybody wants this organization to be part social and part philanthropic.
Right.
So we just decided that we would give part of our dues each year, and it's a significant portion of the dues that go to charity.
It's a third.
And that takes away us having to do anything else if we choose not to.
Hmm.
Now, the award show is our big fundraiser, and we will raise, I don't know, quite a bit of money this year. This year is going to be double the size last year was in terms of tickets sold. We already are there.
That's awesome, especially in this economy.
And that's the other thing. I mean, we also feel we've been pretty darn lucky being as early in the year as we are. We don't think it's going to get better for the rest of this year anyway, unfortunately. So.
Well, and there's a lot of other events coming up.
Right.
You know, April and May have other banquets and events coming up that are fundraising.
This
in is in nature. So
fundraising season,
this
right
is
now.
Early.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've been very fortunate with our,
right
with our underwriters that. At all this
and in the beginning, we didn't have all that competition. There were no other fundraisers.
Well, see, you started all the competition.
Yeah, we did.
Well, you had to start everything sometime.
Well, let's recap. Because we have an event this weekend, and I wanted to get that in before we're cut off on this segment. John?
Okay. Give us the particulars again.
The event is this Saturday, March the 21st, beginning at 7:30 at the Houston Zoo. It is black tie or beautiful gown if you choose to wear that, and it's going to include zoo animals. It's going to include our awards that we will give away, and the entire last half of the evening is going to be dinner and dancing.
All right, and that telephone number again for tickets.
It is 713-639-2000.
I want to thank John Heinzerling.
Hey,
give me
good.
A chance
thank
to
you.
Pronounce it right. And Michael Kemper with the Diana Foundation. Thank you.
Thank
you for
Voices.
Having us.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 14th, 2009. Headlines in Nigeria's leading newspapers this week had gays and lesbians storming or besieging the National Assembly to kick against or protest legislation against same-gender marriage. The bill is so extreme that it would define any two people of the same gender who live together as a possible illegal marriage, punishable by up to 3 years in prison. It would also criminalize those who aid and abet them and give police sweeping power to raid public or private gatherings of any group of people suspected of being gay or lesbian. A similar bill was proposed in 2006, but died when the government collapsed. It was reintroduced earlier this year. 23-year-old Rashidi Williams of the Queer Alliance of Nigeria told a public hearing held by a House of Representatives committee that, "I did not choose to be gay. It is trial enough to live in this country. We should not create more laws to make us suffer." Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International are among several global advocacy groups that have condemned the proposed legislation. But a large number of Nigerian organizations, most notably the Anglican Church of Nigeria, also submitted briefs to the committee. The church called same-gender marriage ungodly, unnatural, unhealthy, and un-African. It is a perversion, a deviation, and an aberration that is capable of engendering moral and social holocaust in this country, the brief said. Outlawing it is to ensure the continued existence of this nation. Raids of so-called gay weddings, which attendees have said were just parties, have made headlines across the country in recent years. Consensual adult homosexual acts are already illegal in Nigeria, punishable by up to 14 years in prison at hard labor in northern Christian regions of the country, and death by stoning in southern Muslim areas. If the legislation wins House approval, it will then go to the Senate for consideration.
A draft bill to ban discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity has been withdrawn from active consideration in the Serbian parliament under pressure from the country's Orthodox Church, according to a report on the regional Quiria web portal. The government had originally supported the measure, as did various ministries, but the church objected to two provisions in the legislation that needed to be adopted if Serbians are to gain visa-free travel to European Union countries. One ensured the free expression and practice of religion or belief. The other banned discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity or expressions thereof. LGBT activists condemned the government for not standing up to the church and pushing the legislation.
A three-day conference in Uganda's capital of Kampala, sponsored by right-wing religious groups based in the U.S. that believe homosexuality can be cured, ended with the formation of a new Uganda organization called the Anti-Gay Task Force. Its mission is to fight against the spread of homosexuality and lesbianism in the country. Conference organizers, who included a board member of the so-called ex-gay group Exodus International and a Holocaust denier, claimed that LGBT rights activists recruit young people into homosexuality. They also met with several members of Uganda's parliament. The Anti-Gay Task Force promises to wipe out same-gender sexual activity in the African country.
Uganda already criminalizes homosexual acts, and authorities routinely harass and attack LGBT civil rights advocates.
But an estimated 300,000 onlookers watched about 10,000 participants march down Oxford Street in Sydney's 31st annual Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade on March 7th. Australia's openly gay Olympic diving gold medalist Matthew Mitchum led the procession, surrounded by dancers in swimming trunks waving scorecards. He posed frequently for photos with several colorfully dressed marchers along the parade route. A tribute to slain U.S. gay politician Harvey Milk was among some 135 floats and marching units, which also included the traditional Dykes on Bikes, American entertainer Joan Rivers in town for a one-woman show, along with uniformed police officers and firefighters, ethnic LGBT groups, businesses, and the usual dancing leathermen and feather and sequin-clad drag queens. Global LGBT rights concerns were the focus of this year's extravaganza under the theme of Nations United. Revelers celebrated into the early morning hours at several post-parade parties. A record-breaking crowd of more than 5,000 LGBT people and their supporters in Victoria celebrated the 12th annual Chill Out Festival the same weekend in the former gold mining town of Daylesford.
But a prominent transgender rights activist in Turkey was murdered in front of her home this week in central Istanbul. The LGBT rights group Lambda Istanbul said that Ebru Soykan had reported being beaten and threatened on several occasions by the same man, but authorities took no action. He is now in police custody as the murder suspect. Soykan was the second member of Lambda Istanbul to be murdered in the past year. Advocates blamed the violence, in part, on lack of legal protections and police inaction. While homosexuality is not illegal in Turkey, there are no anti-discrimination laws, and municipalities have used so-called morality laws to harass and attack LGBT people and organizations.
Human Rights Watch called attention this week to the abuse of transgender people in the South American nation of Guyana and called for the repeal of a law that criminalizes dressing in clothing of the opposite gender. Several people have been charged under that law in recent weeks. Scott Long, director of the group's LGBT rights program, charged that police are using archaic laws to violate basic freedoms. This is a campaign meant to drive people off the streets simply because they dress or act in ways that transgress gender norms. A letter delivered to Guyana's president, also signed by the Caribbean Forum for Liberation of Genders and Sexualities, Global Rights, Guyana Rainbow Foundation, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, and Guyana's Society Against Sexual Orientation Discrimination, called for all charges to be dropped against those who've been arrested under the law.
Elsewhere, however, Argentina's military has officially decriminalized homosexuality and lifted its ban on service by gays and lesbians. The change was approved by Parliament last year as part of an overhaul of the military justice system and took effect in early March.
The Philippines also opened its armed forces to gays and lesbians earlier this month, sort of. The military's civil relations chief told reporters that, "If you are qualified, I guess we are not biased against the third sex." Officials said that they don't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation as long as recruits don't show their tendencies.
That sounds like don't ask, don't tell in the U.S., where this week a congressman lamented the continuing discharges of qualified military personnel under that policy. Democratic Representative Jim Moran said he's requested monthly updates from the Pentagon on the impact of the policy until it's repealed. A bill to do just that was introduced last week. Moran reported that 11 discharged soldiers in January included an intelligence collector, a healthcare specialist, a military police officer, 4 infantry personnel, and a water treatment specialist.
In other news, the Oscar Wilde Bookshop on Christopher Street in New York City, touted as the oldest LGBT bookstore in the world, will close its doors on March 29th. Owner Kim Brenster wrote on the store's website that the store didn't have the resources to weather the current economic crisis. She told the New York Times that, even if we were rent-free, it wouldn't be enough for us to cover the bills we have. The Oscar Wilde Bookshop was opened in 1967 by pioneering activist Craig Rodwell, 19 months before the Stonewall riots on Christopher Street launched the modern struggle for LGBT equality. It functioned as a meeting place for local activists throughout the initial years of the fledgling gay liberation movement.
And after almost 30 years in the Los Angeles area, first in Silver Lake and then in West Hollywood, a different light bookstore is disappearing too. Owner Bill Barker also cited the current economic downturn, along with street construction projects that took years and reduced parking and foot traffic in the area. He said those challenges increased after a 2007 fire burned down the store's neighbor, popular gay night spot Mickey's, further reducing foot traffic. Barker stressed that San Francisco's a different light, and the store's online site will remain open.
And finally, the Washington, D.C. home that's been called the birthplace of the city's gay rights movement is being designated as a historic landmark. It belongs to 83-year-old Franklin E. Kameny, who was dubbed the father of gay activism by the Historic Preservation Review Board, which recommended the designation. Kameny fought in World War II, earned a doctorate, and then moved to D.C. to work as a government astronomer. He filed the first U.S. court case to address sexual orientation after being fired by the Army Map Service in 1957 for being gay. Kameny also led demonstrations against sodomy laws, helped end the American Psychiatric Association's categorization of homosexuality as a mental illness, and was the first openly gay person to run for Congress. A collection of Kameny's papers was added to the Library of Congress in October 2006, and some of his political placards and buttons were put on display in the Smithsonian Museum of American History in 2007. It's unusual for a site to be recognized as historic while its occupant still lives there. Kameny worried about the condition of his newly designated landmark. He told the Washington Post that the lawn is a mess and needs to be put in order. The gutters, the heating, things like that. But he said he was touched by the recognition.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 14th, 2009, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, in Houston, it could be 40 degrees or it can be 80 degrees. You never know in the springtime. But one thing that we have in spring is softball.
Softball.
And we have
the women's softball.
Well, we have Montrose Softball League.
Yes, the Montrose Softball League.
And we have the commissioner in tonight, Bill Sampson.
Hello.
Hello. Tell us, what is the Montrose Softball League for people that may be under a rock?
Sure. The Montrose Softball League is a not-for-profit organization that was founded back in 1980, so 2009 is actually going to be our 30th season.
That's incredible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everything started about that time, it seems like. Everything's like 30 years old, like Bunnies, and there's a bunch of different organizations.
Right. It was it was an exciting time back in the early 80s here, and a lot of things were going on, and the community was really getting
blossoming.
Visible.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, how did you become the commissioner of the Montrose Softball League?
Which time?
I've been appointed by the President Obama.
Yeah, I've been commissioner on a few occasions actually, and this is going to be my 28th season to play.
28 years.
Oh my.
Yes, so it's pretty
amazing. You're too young for that. Come on.
I started early.
You started when you were five.
Mm-hmm. But I've been
a little gay boy.
Officer. Yes. A little gay boy. I was an officer kind of on and off throughout the years, different officer positions, and been out and just a player for the last couple of years, and now I've stepped back in and got elected commissioner for the next 2 years.
Now, I have a limited knowledge because I'm a typical gay, and I don't have like a lot of sports knowledge, but I know that there's different divisions or leagues.
That is true. There are different divisions. Back when the league started, it was just one league. Everybody played everybody else, and you had one league champion. And through the years, we've kind of morphed into different divisions for different skill levels. So we have four divisions now, A, B, C, and D. And the A division is the most skilled division, and the D is the least skilled.
So how do you decide the skills? I mean, is there like a tryout and there's you have to catch so many balls? And
there's actually a player rating system that was developed. We belong to an international gay softball organization, and that group came up with a player rating questionnaire, set of skill level questions. You know, does the player have the ability to throw the ball 90 feet? You know, in the vicinity of someone else, this kind of thing. And they did that to try to identify skill levels for players and grouped them into teams so that teams were playing like competition. So you weren't going out there and getting clobbered by somebody because they were way better than you, or you weren't out there clobbering someone else. And it made for a much more enjoyable situation, of course, if you're going out and able to compete with people who play like you play. And so that's how it developed, and we followed in that guideline.
And I guess the growth in the numbers, people coming out. I bet you it was a very small group back in the beginning.
Yeah, when the league started back in 1980, there were about 8 teams. And it stayed probably 8 to 10 teams for the first several years. Bumped up a little in the 90s to probably 12 to 15 teams. And oddly enough, in this decade, when the popularity of softball seemed to have waned in the city of Houston, the city leagues are much smaller, much less popular. The Montrose Softball League has actually just grown by leaps and bounds. We now, for the coming season, we have 29 teams and 550 members in our league. So
now, if I remember, softball was played with 11 players?
Yeah, 10 players on defense. You can bat 11. We actually have some special rules for some of the lower divisions where they can actually bat everybody on their roster to try to encourage more participation.
But that's a lot of people.
Yes.
That's, congratulations. That's a lot of people playing softball. Is it co-ed or is it separated teams? Because I know that the lesbians have their own team.
Right. There is a women's softball league, a gay softball league in Houston that is separate from the Montrose Softball mm-hmm. League. Always has been. But we actually have our members in the international organization what they call the open division, which means we have both men and women. It's not technically co-ed by the typical softball rules of co-ed, because co-ed means a very specific set of rules where you have to alternate men and women batting. And we are just basically a mixed league. Probably, I would say 80 to 85% of our members are men, and probably 15 to 20% women. So we have a large number of women. We actually have some all women teams in our league, and it's a very mixed organization.
I bet the all women teams are really good.
Well, there you go.
I'm just saying.
We lesbians are tough at softball.
Hey, I'm yes. just saying. There's yeah, probably years of practice there.
Yes. Quite often, many more years than the men get.
Yes, because we're just out there for looks and looking at the other people. I have a lot of friends,
and we come to play softball.
Right. Now, I'm aware of a couple of fundraisers you'll have throughout the year.
Yes, we actually have we do support charity. Charitable organizations in the community. We have several social events throughout the year, including pranks, pumpsters and pranks, mm-hmm. which is kind of a pageant, including mm-hmm. a best chess contest. And we have the longest running thing we have probably is Jocks and Dresses, mm-hmm. which is a lot of fun. And it's basically a drag show where each of the teams can have a contestant or an entire team act quite often, which are pretty funny.
Very elaborate.
Yes, they can be very elaborate.
Those queens put on a show.
Yeah, it's a big night, and we raise a lot of money there. It's a very successful fundraiser. We've also started in the last few years having a Montrose Softball League golf tournament, mm-hmm. and the biggest thing we have is, participation-wise, is the Lone Star Classic Softball Tournament Memorial Day weekend, which we've had for back since the 80s, and we host teams from not just Houston, but all over North America.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite an event, and part of the proceeds from all of those events then go to the designated charities that we select each year to support.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, you had a recruitment day?
Yes. It's quite interesting, I think, from the early days when we started, and kind of sometimes you put posters up in bars and told people where to show up, and people that showed up tried to get on teams, or you had a thing where you could tear off and send your name in, to a much more organized event the last few years, which is probably no accident that it coincides with the tremendous growth in our league. And we actually had a day at the softball fields where we invite people that are interested to come out. It's quite organized. We do clinics and help them learn the game and try to fit them on teams that are in the right divisions for their skill level. And this year, we ran it a little differently because we ran it actually across about, I think, three or four different weekends.
Mm-hmm.
For coaches to come out that are looking for players and see the new people, the new players to come out and meet the coaches in the league and kind of find out what we're about. And it's worked to where we had, I think, pretty much every year, the last three or four at least, we've ended up with close to 50 people joining the league from each of the recruitment days each year. So it's quite amazing.
Okay, so that's happened, and now the teams are set. So
right,
they're ready to play ball. Now, when does that happen?
Opening day for the softball season is this coming Sunday, 22nd.
And it's always on Sunday, right?
Yes, we play. In the old days, we used to play predominantly on Saturday and then a little bit on Sunday evening, and now we play almost exclusively on Sundays.
It's funny because they'll all be sunburned on, like, Monday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What was the reason to change? Just curious.
When we started at Levy Field, which is over near Kirby in the Southwest Freeway. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we only had, like, 8 teams, 10 teams. We only needed one field. And we were kind of at the mercy of what the city had to offer as far as field availability. And what they had to offer was predominantly Saturday afternoon and evenings, and then a little bit of time on a Sunday evening. So that's how we started our league. Through time, we got bigger. We had players who worked on Saturdays and kind of asked for mm-hmm. more Sunday play. So we kind of morphed into a Sunday only league, which is pretty much what we are now.
And you have, like, a theme events at bars that rotate?
Yes. Part of the social activity that we provide is each Sunday we name an official kind of sponsor bar for that Sunday for the post game get together, and so we rotate that each Sunday, and we encourage all the league members to go out to that bar on that particular evening. Usually somewhere between 6 and 8 o'clock, have a couple of hours where we get a good crowd, and it works to the benefit of the players because we get to really socialize and get out in a setting where it's not quite maybe as competitive as it is when you're playing on the field. And also, of course, it helps support our sponsors and gives some something back to them. So it's a lot of fun.
Is that website is the bar on the website?
Yes. Yes, we have. If you can go to the website, which is MontroseSoftballLeague.com, so it's quite lengthy.
Perfect segue there.
And we have. You can get the playing schedule. You can get directions to the fields, and you can see the official social event for that Sunday listed on the schedule.
Now, the fields used to be kind of way far north, I understand, and then they moved closer in.
Well, actually, we're still pretty far north for what most people consider. We went from Levy Field in the 80s to we kind of got kicked off the field by the city back in the mid 80s, and we were battling with
homophobia.
Yes, we were actually sharing the guy who ran the baseball leagues that also used that field. Ended up running on the straight slate, if anybody remembers back in the
80s. Oh, yes, the straight slate.
Yes, well, he was one of the candidates there. And so actually we had several battles with him. He would come out in the mornings and that we were supposed to play in the afternoons and flood the fields. And so it was really nice. So we battled with that.
I can't remember his name.
I've blocked it out. Thankfully. The city kind of said, you need to find another field, and we'll help you find another field. So mm-hmm. we moved out to the Heights, a couple of fields in the Heights, and eventually kind of settled at Tim Hearn Field, which is over near Memorial and Wah. And we played there for most of the 90s until we started getting so large that one field couldn't accommodate all the teams we had and all the games we needed to play. And at that time, which was in the, I guess, around 2000, 2001, we actually moved out to Texas Instrument Fields out on 59 in Airport.
Right, right. That's
for about 3 years. They had two fields for us. And then we continued to grow so much, we actually had to look for a four-field complex. And that led us to Slow Pitch City, which is where we currently play. Mm-hmm. It's a private complex. We lease the fields from them. And it has four fields. It has a shaded area, covered area for fans and teams to gather during the day. It has a concession stand, food, beverages. So it's a nice change for us to really kind of have a complex that's pretty well dedicated to us, and they've worked with us very well. So.
And they like you there.
Yes, they actually
like the city, right?
Exactly.
Mm.
They actually like us. They want us
there.
They
like the gay dollar, I guess.
Yes, they do. And they get a lot.
It spins like all the rest, doesn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
It's quite social, actually, on Sundays. The people come and hang out for before their games, after their games. They socialize, watch other games, and they spend a lot of money there. So.
Is there a map on the website?
Yes, there's a link. There is a link to the complex website, and has directions on how to get there.
And
basically,
so
it's up off of Aldine Westfield near Intercontinental Airport.
Is it too late to join play, or is we just got to be spectators now?
Most of the teams are set, but there is we have a roster deadline that goes into the season a little bit, so there can be some changes. But most of the teams by now have their players and are kind of ready to start play.
So if you're out there and you're listening and you're interested in seeing these jocks go at it on the baseball field.
And the girls.
And the girls. Well, I'm speaking to my people.
Okay, I'm speaking to my people.
There we go. We're diverse. It's this Saturday, right?
This Sunday.
Sunday.
I'm sorry.
This Sunday, yes. The 22nd.
He went through that whole story about Sunday.
I'm so programmed for Saturday events. It's Sunday.
It's this Sunday.
Right.
At what time?
The games actually start this Sunday at 8 o'clock in the morning. We have so many games to get in, and we have to make room for opening ceremonies. Opening ceremonies are actually at noon, so we'll play some games beforehand, stop those in order to have our opening ceremonies at noon, and then the games continue, ending up about 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
And all of this information can be found on the website.
Absolutely.
Which is?
MontroseSoftballLeague.com.
Thank you very much. That we have Bill Sanson, the commissioner of the Montrose Softball League, telling us about the opening ceremonies this Sunday.
This Sunday. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you very much.
When I'm feeling lonely, someone telephone me. It's getting hard to pass the time. So take me out of dying. Watch me while I'm flying. Baby, it's a waste of time. So say that you will find him. Creep on up behind him. I'm moving around the town all day. Well, I'm underestimated. I'm highly underrated. Can there be another way?
I need a man. I'm only nutritious. I work out 7 times a day. Well, you think that's kind of tragic, but that Tina works her magic, 'cause I haven't had a fight all day.
I need a man. And goes without demanding. They're all looking 'cause he's trying to hide. If I could just impress him, let me take him home, undress him. He'd be sleeping here right by my side.
I need a man. Perhaps a man like you. I need a man to make my dreams come true. I need a man. Dreams come true.
unreleased dance CD recorded in 2007. That was Richard Licori, I Need a Man.
Well, the Houston International Festival is just around the corner. iFest 2009, showcasing Ireland, will take place in downtown Houston April 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th, and will feature performances by Los Lobos, Mavis Staples, Hugh Masekela, Cherish the Ladies, Ohio Players, and many, many more. Between now and March 31st, get half-price tickets for iFest online at ifest.org. Don't miss the fun of the Houston International Festival April 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th in downtown Houston. Get your half-price tickets before March 31st at ifest.org. All proceeds benefit festival arts and education programs. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Well, we're back.
Springtime in Houston is all about events and fundraisers, and our next group of guests are here to give you kind of an advance warning and advance notice about a fundraiser that started, kind of rechristened itself last year for the first time, and now it's in year two, and that is Une Soirée Pelouse.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you for having us, Brian.
Well, I remember talking about this last year and thinking, you know, it's a cool event, a cool idea.
Be sure to introduce yourself.
Yes. I was just jumping right into the...
He jumped right into the middle of the interview.
Well, I'm Mark Garcia. I'm one of the co-chairs.
Good. Thank you. And?
And Tom Baker, also one of the co-chairs.
All right.
And Tom Thompson, also one of the co-chairs.
Thank you, all of y'all.
We got Tom, Mark.
That's right.
Jennifer Bryan. Well, as I was saying, last year was the first year, and I thought it was a cool concept for an event, and then I attended it, and I really enjoyed it. And last year's event was a Moulin Rouge theme, right?
Last year's event, when we first started the event, actually, we didn't have a theme for it. And then Tom Baker came on board as one of the co-chairs, and he said, we really need something sexy to, like, really make it stand out.
I know why he did. He had that little dress that he wanted to wear.
He was the can-can girl. Hello.
He's like, let's create an event where I can wear this dress.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm kidding.
But you know what, Brian? Part of it was, though, that I don't know if many people in our community remember those days when you would go to an event and it was one of those things that you planned it out for months and weeks and you just looked forward to it.
I think those days have kind of slipped by a little bit. But you're trying to recreate the method.
But you know what? They might have slipped by, but they're not gone.
Exactly.
Well, then that's the important part. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a theme event like that, whatever it may be, it gives you an opportunity to get deep back into the closet and find those little secret things that you kept that you got a chance to wear.
Well, like Brian said earlier, it was this particular event is kind of, you know, paying homage to our history. And so part of it was that a long ago party, this is loosely based on, the garden party from years and years ago.
Oh, the garden party.
Yes, which was mostly a drag theme event, though.
Oh,
nothing wrong with drag.
Oh, no.
Hi. No, no. We all have done drag in our
I still have my red vinyl dress.
Bring it out again.
Spring dress.
But part of the fun is, with this particular event, is that it's not only for those folks that enjoy doing drag. It's a time for our community to come together and be creative. So this year's event is, Tom Thompson?
It is. Une Soirée Pelouse in Wonderland.
Okay, so listeners, start getting those gears going. Start thinking about your costumes. Start planning. You know, get your costume together.
So, if there's somebody that doesn't understand the name, tell us about it.
Well, last year we said was the Moulin Rouge theme. This year is kind of like through the looking glass down the rabbit hole, Alice in Wonderland kind of adventure.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of costumes, it can be as elaborate. Last year we had a 6 foot tall pink poodle.
Literally. Oh my gosh, and did she bark?
But we also had folks that just came in, like, you know, little ears, little headpiece. You know, you can do it up as much as you want, and we encourage that. But, you know, we want everyone to be involved in the theme that's going on. But it could be just a small little, you know, headpiece, a shirt that just says, like, eat me. On it, you know, just tie it in. Use your imagination.
Is there a color theme? Because I know last year it was like red and black.
No, this year we decided that we wanted to make sure that we stay true to the theme. But part of it is, though, that this year we want to encourage people to create something that's their own that allows them to actually stand out within the group. So you can take out a white tee and write "Eat Me" all over it and come on down to Rich's on April 26th and drink some of the potion we're going to be giving out.
Okay, so let's talk about the event itself. It's April 26th. What time does it start?
It's going to be on April 26th.
Sunday, which is a Sunday. Mm-hmm. Starts at 4 p.m. And then I'm not sure. It ends at 7?
No, it's going to
the next morning?
It might end at 7 for someone. No, but it's a four-hour event.
Yes.
Okay.
And so we're going to have unlimited number of beverages for the folks that attend the event.
You know, I know people that can challenge that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you can.
They can drink.
And so their event might end much later than ours does.
I see.
Well, the hour's very much like the garden party.
Yes.
It's Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, you know, people, you're just sitting at home usually watching TV, have nothing to do. You can come out, support the community.
Good point to raise. This is a benefit.
Correct.
For which organizations?
For our sisters and also the Houston Buyers Club. Part of what we have always wanted to do from the inception of this event was that many of the programs that exist in our GLBT community are dying out. And we want to make sure that although events today raise money for programs, we want to make sure that it's in the forefront. Everything that we do in our community should have a direct tie-in to programs that positively impact the GLBT community.
I wish I heard that
that's
more.
That's great.
Because, like, you know, it's kind of phasing out. I think, you know, I think our community is becoming a little apathetic.
Well, Brian, I mean, you're a huge advocate around the GLBT community. I mean, you've done so much within the GLBT community. And we need other people like yourself, like Tom Thompson, like Tom Baker, that say, you know,
like
what?
Mark Garcia.
Thank you. You know, we exist in our community, but we don't exist in isolation. We need to make sure that we fold other people in.
Exactly.
And part of what a sisters does is their programming outreaches to people within the lesbian community, mm-hmm. to assist them and offer a helping hand. Part of what the Houston Buyers Club is doing is providing education around HIV, providing those support systems. And so, you know what? When I sit back and I read about stories in our community, how people are not helping, I say, and why aren't they? And so I get out there and I start doing what I have to do.
Exactly.
And too many people get the idea, well, I don't have any money, I don't have this, but time. Time is our most valuable asset. Volunteerism.
Yeah, we're looking for volunteers as well. You can go to ensoiree.com. I'll spell that for you. It's ensoiree.com. And you can check out what's going on. And if you have time or whatever, shoot us an email, give us a call. One of the things that we're doing with the purchasing of tickets, we do have, I'll just say at this time, we do have a limited number of pre-sale tickets available.
At a discounted price.
At a discounted price, correct. Yeah. And that's general admission and also VIP tickets and also VIP packages.
Is there a phone number also they can contact, or is it just the website?
They can go to the website. Again, it's www.unsoiree.com. And when they get to that website, there is a form on the very last page that they can complete. We will get back with them as soon as possible. You know what? There are some folks out there that still do not have internet connection.
That's crazy.
So you know what? They can call me on my personal line. That's 832-452-1806. And it is also on the website.
Okay, and I have to say that I love the new website. It's great.
It's very nice.
It's fun, isn't it?
I like it. I like it.
Okay, don't be critical, people. It's my first attempt.
I've seen plenty of bad websites, and that's not a bad one. Okay, so let's talk about what to expect at the for
people that have never been to this event.
Okay. This event, again, is going to be at Rich's. Mm-hmm. We've rented the entire place out, and we are looking to have unlimited music, dancing entertainment. Of course, the beverages will also be included. That's always a plus. Mm-hmm. Good to get the little fun flowing. Mm-hmm. We've got some great entertainers. We actually have entertainment last year. I know we have Eric Alon returning. Mm-hmm. We've got Anita Bump, and then Kim Kuzma, if you're unfamiliar with Kim Kuzma. She's a great singer from Vancouver. I don't have the chance to meet her personally or see her perform, and she is just a great person, great entertainer.
And she's hot.
Yes. Totally she's hot. One hot number.
But you know what? Let's not forget about Colt Mann.
Oh,
Mitch Branson.
There's a picture here in
there's
the
a poster,
studio.
And this hairy man is seducing me with his chest hair and his eyes.
You know what? But I don't want to forget about, you know, the best. Well, one of the components of the party that is just amazing. Tom, you want to tell them a little bit about it?
We are so excited. We actually have a female exotic dancer who is a professional pole dancer. Her name is JJ Jordan. She's part of the Sisters group, and she's going to be performing. So we're going to have entertainment for the men, the ladies, and something for everyone.
It's not just the testosterone-driven crazy
absolutely
gay
not
men.
No, absolutely this not is going to be full-rounded GLBT entertainment. Diverse.
You know what? Today on Facebook, I don't know if you saw it, Brian, I said it was going to be hotter than a summer day in hell.
I'm a Facebook.
I saw that, yes. And for that matter, there is an invitation on Facebook if you're one of our friends.
Exactly.
Yes, I'm kind of a Facebook
junkie. Aficionado. I have to call them junkies,
yeah,
which I'm not one.
Jennifer, I don't think you're one of my friends.
I know, it's only
another
time.
It's not my fault.
Oh, my gosh.
You can't miss me.
Okay, so that's a good... Let's mention your Facebook page. You have a group? Or
there, it actually is not a group. It is an event.
Okay.
And so what they'll do is that they can always go to Queer Voices.
Yep.
And they can research the events there because mm-hmm. you guys are one of our friends.
Yes.
Or one of the attendees. And then, you know, upload that.
It's a magical thing. If you're not on Facebook, it's kind of the thing to do these days.
Yeah, it totally is. But we also have information about this particular event on MySpace as well. And so they can always go to MySpace, Macario Garcia, and Shazam. You'll get all the info. But yeah. I want Tom to tell you guys about this holiday trip that we're giving away.
Go ahead.
Talk to us.
Well, not only are we having world-class entertainment, guys, but we are going to, and ladies, we are going to be giving away a cruise for two on the world's most gay-friendly cruise line, Norwegian Cruise Line,
oh,
NCL.
Yeah.
And last year, what was really fantastic is the winner has to be present at the event, and we will draw from the ticket stub.
I so wanted to win that last year.
Be there.
I know. I was there.
NCL gave us a list of cruises that you could pick anywhere in the world. It was unbelievable. And, of course, the wonderful cruise for two was given away, and off the happy winners went on a cruise. I'm not sure where they went, but somewhere wonderful in the world. It could be Europe.
It was hot.
Alaska.
No matter where it was, it was hot.
Yeah.
I see your pictures on Facebook, all your little wonderful cruises and vacations.
Oh, yeah. Well, we get around sometimes.
Well, part of the other thing that I want to make sure that we mention is some of our supporters.
Yep.
Tom Thompson, you want to bring those out?
Yeah,
sure.
Please. Our supporters this year were... Houston Chronicle is one of our big supporters.
Okay.
They've been backing us. They backed us last year as well. Mm-hmm. So it's great to have that great giant media push
sponsor
behind us. Then we have Aquafest Cruises and CruiseCenter.com. They're the ones supplying a lot of the volunteers and also for the cruise as well. We have the Colt Studio Group providing us with lots of media representation, promotions, and also their lovely
Mr. VIP
Mayor.
Gifts.
Yes.
The VIP gifts, which
the
we're
VIP
only
gifts
calling adult novelties.
For everyone.
For women and men.
We figured uses... That
this is
you're
the,
not
this
allowed
is a
to
family
talk
show. Just let yeah let the listeners
calm down.
Let the listeners' imagination go wild.
Yes. Then we also have Norwegian Cruise Line, which is supplying the cruise, Texas T-shirt Company, and Bud Light.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, Brian, also we want to make sure a lot of people are going to be seeing some of our signage out there. They're going to see some really sexy signage that is going to come out in About Magazine. Mm-hmm. They're one of our supporters as well. And also in Outsmart Magazine, which they, you know, last year they went out all about for us.
We love Outsmart.
We love Outsmart. Greg has been amazing, and so has Tom Fricky out there. Mm-hmm. Oh,
yes,
gosh, Tom's he really great. Is an amazing guy.
All the crew at Outsmart, we love you.
Yes. Anyway, but they're going to see some of those sexy ads. In addition to those sexy ads, they're going to see these ads that have paintings on them. There are going to be these two male kings mm-hmm. that are embracing. And so it just gives that gay mm-hmm. kind of feel to it.
And it ties in the theme.
It ties in the theme.
Yeah.
And also the artist by the name of Lisbeth Ortiz, who is also the official 2008 Latin Grammy artist, has graced us with painting an original painting for this event of lesbians as well. She's the creator of the kings and also of the lesbians, and she will also have 8 original pieces for sale at the actual event that are gay themed Alice in Wonderland.
Now, will that
how
be
wonderful
in the VIP area?
It's going to be in the VIP area.
Okay, so that's an incentive to get VIP tickets.
That is definitely an incentive, and of course, you know, top shelf liquor as well, and also the, you know, the very, very expensive gift bags we're going to be giving to the VIP
with assorted goodies.
What's with assorted goodies,
air quotes. Yeah, swag.
With swag.
Yeah, swag. That's what they call it.
Yeah.
Oh, I think
swag,
one thing swag. We don't want to go oversight with all the fun things going on. That this is just a great place to be. On that Sunday, it's fun for everybody in the community mm-hmm. as well as some of the straights out there that mm-hmm. just want to come out and have a good time.
Mm-hmm. If
you know, we don't bite.
If
really.
You've gone to our website, we've cloned a new acronym. It's SGLBT, and it's Straight, Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgendered Groups. And so we're very proud of that. So we want to make sure that everybody out there in the greater Houston community really understands that the programs that we're supporting through this fundraiser mm-hmm. do not only affect the GLBT community, they affect everyone.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, last year at the event, I was blown away by the costumes, and I challenge our listeners and people that may attend to go above and beyond last year's costumes and mm-hmm. just bring it for this event, because it was so much fun to see the costumes.
Well, and if you just want to see them, you know, something simple, a t-shirt, whatever, come. That's the important part, is mm-hmm. to take the time and come and enjoy yourself. Mm-hmm. Because I remember the events like this in my early days, you know, I didn't want to get out. I was frightened of really getting out. Mm-hmm. And this was a warm, friendly, fun place to come.
Exactly. You know, something that I told a good friend of mine the other day, they were like, oh, I'm not into costumes, Mark. And I said, you know what? Go watch the movie. And if you want to come as a shrub or pretend like you had a mushroom tea, go ahead and come in anyway.
Like the Mad Hatter.
Like the Mad Hatter. And also, you know what? This particular fundraiser is a non-competitive fundraiser, which we were deliberate in making sure we did not interfere with bunnies.
You really have to. Yeah. Look at the community calendar.
Yeah, look
at you even say that in your press release.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And what part of what I thought was really fun was that people are going to be out at Bunnies on the Bayou a couple of weeks before and out at Jungle. And so they're going to have those bunny ears. Recycle your costume.
be earth friendly.
Exactly. One last thing that I did want to mention was that we want to make sure that when people come out, that they practice that sense of giving, and that they invite their friends that would normally not go out to one of these events and say, you know what, you're coming with me, I'm purchasing your ticket, and we're going to have a great time. Guava's our after party, and also we are outselling tickets at Guava, Crocker Bar, as well as George's and Momong throughout the week. So look out for us in our signs.
Okay, so if our listeners are out there and they want to get more information, they can go to the website, which is
www.unsoiree.com.
And the event is?
Sunday, April 22nd at 4 p.m. 26th, I'm sorry, 26th at Rich's.
Very good.
All right. Thank you all for being
thank
here.
Thank you for having us.
This is Queer Voices.
miss rock. Bash me, mash me, I bash you back. You're messing with the wrong fact, you're about to get jacked. A new generation, we taking our rights. Taking the gay population to new heights. Watch out now, girly boy can fight. What's the medicine? My rhyme's too tight. You can try to diss, but you know the consequences. Payback, I'm the Michael Jordan of the gay rap. Take that, chop my style. Top or bottom, I'm versatile. Two men holding hands, walking down the block. Don't be jealous, cause we're so damn hot.
Come on, let me hear it loud. You're damn proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud. You're damn proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud. You're damn proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud. You're damn proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. A brand new generation taking over. Freedom fighters, some call us soldiers. Unity between you and I. Sick of being a punchline and crucified. Try to tear us down, but still we rise. I'm sick to the games, I'm sick of the lies. From the gay ghettos to the Malibu mansion. They can't keep us down, cause we keep on dancing. Even got the queens switched from disco. Got them all dancing from Greenwich to Frisco. Latinos say, Papi Chulo Loco. Number one homo, a logo, let's go. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. A new generation, we taking our rights. Taking the gay population to new heights. From the gay ghetto to the Malibu mansion. They can't keep us down cause we keep on dancing. Sick of the games, sick of the lies. Sick of being a punchline and crucified. Bash me, mash me, I'll bash you back. You messing with the wrong fag, you about to get jacked. A new generation, we taking our rights. Taking the gay population to new heights. From the gay ghetto to the Malibu mansion. They can't keep us down cause we keep on dancing. Sick of the games, sick of the lies. Sick of being a punchline and crucified. Bash me, mash me, I'll bash you back. You messing with the wrong fag, you about to get jacked. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Young and proud, young and proud.
Well, there's something you don't hear very often, some gay hip-hop. That was from 2008 and a CD called Young, Gay, and Proud. And the artist, Captain Mayek. And that comes to us, and actually all of the gay, lesbian, transgender music that we play comes to us from J.D. Doyle. And I want to put in a plug for his Queer Music Heritage coming up next weekend, next Monday night on our show, the fourth Monday of every month, Queer Music Heritage. And next Monday on Queer Voices in the second hour, it will be Queer Music Heritage, and it will be the second part of JD's show about gay music on tape. And that's a show that he put together about music that was released on cassette tape. This is Queer Voices.
In the first hour, we had a segment on the Montreal Softball League. And continuing in the gay sports vein, we have another gay sport.
And we had softball.
Softball, that's what
yes,
I'm saying.
Say.
And now we have bowling. And joining us tonight.
If you don't want to be outside doing something, you can do something inside.
And joining us tonight is David Felton, the president of the Sunday Night Interlooper Alternative League. Did I get that right?
Interloop. Alternative League, yes.
Yes, so I assume there's more than one league?
Yes, we have actually five GLBT leagues. Four of them are at Pacific Lanes, which is on Bel Air, and one is at Del Mar Lanes. The four of them are mixed, male, female, gay, straight, whoever wants to come. The other one is strictly women, and that's on a Monday night.
Now, can just anybody show up, or do they need to bring people to form a team?
No, you can come in singly. We'll put you up with a team, or you can come in as a whole team. We encourage whole teams because that makes it a little bit more fun for those that are bowling. But It's a social thing for most of the people in the league, and we have quite a mixture of people.
A whole team, four people or five?
Depends on the league.
Oh, okay.
On Sunday night, the one that I'm president of, we have a four-person team.
Okay.
On Wednesday night, it's a five-person team. And on Thursday night at Del Mar, it's a two-person team. So we have a mixture for everybody.
And I assume that trans people are welcome.
Oh, trans people are welcome. Straights are welcome. Everybody's
welcome.
As long
as they wear the right shoes.
Well, yes, you do have to wear the right shoes.
Now, let's talk about the outfits. What do people wear to this?
Well, most of them are very casual. They come in shorts or they come in jeans. It's nothing very formal. We never have costumes because it's sort of hard to bowl in costumes.
Ah, so it's...
We do have tournaments that we go to that are sponsored, again, by the Gay Bowling Organization. We have a national organization called IGBO, which is the International Gay Bowling Organization. And it's throughout the United States, Hawaii, New Zealand, and Canada.
Now, how did you get involved with this?
I started bowling in 1995 because I had been here a few years, and I was tired of the bar scene since I don't drink. And I needed something to do. And a friend of mine told me about bowling, and I had never thought about it. I come from up north where I used to play golf, but I said when I moved to Houston, I would never go outside to play the sport again. And
perfect. Bowling's perfect?
Bowling is perfect.
And bowling and ice skating are real good down here.
And I'm kind of the indoors type person, too.
Yeah.
So I've been talking to my partner, trying to maybe sway him over to that, but he says I'm too involved, so I don't know. But bowling is something I would pursue as a sport rather than...
It's a fun thing to get together. We have... our season begins usually in September, mid-September,
okay,
and goes through the 1st of May, and that's about 27 weeks.
Okay, so we're kind of in the middle of the season.
We're almost to the end of what we call the winter-spring season.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have a summer season that starts towards the end of May.
Bowling's all year round,
oh, yeah,
isn't it?
And we go for 14 weeks through the mid to late August.
Okay, so...
Okay.
When does the summer league start?
It starts the latter part of May, just before Memorial Weekend.
Okay.
And then we... of course, we don't bowl usually on the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And the Memorial Weekend is when IGBO has their annual bowling tournament somewhere in the United States or elsewhere.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
If I want to get involved, how do I contact you guys?
You can contact us through two areas. One is through igbo.org, igbo.org, or wikidoo.aol.com. Wikidoo is Tom O'Dell, and Tom O'Dell is the secretary for four of the five gay leagues.
Okay.
And he's the only one that he doesn't go into the women's only league.
Okay. Try Wickadoo. Would you spell that?
WICCADO.
Okay. Got it.
And Tom, I hope you're listening.
I hope Tom's listening,
yes,
too, because
put in
he
a
got
plug for
this.
Him right there. See? Everybody's going to contact you now.
You're going to get 1,000 emails.
I hope so, because we really encourage. We'd like to see our leagues grow.
And that's what we're here for. We're trying to get the word out, because, right, you know, I'd heard of gay bowling, or bowling for gays.
Bowling for gays?
There you go. But I didn't know how to get a hold of anybody, so
right,
I kind of did some research, and I was, you know, Googling, and I finally found Tom's email address.
Right.
And so I kind of found that. But I thought, you know, let's get the word out about this.
We also have a tournament once a year here in Houston. It's over the 4th of July holiday.
Okay.
And that's Houston, I believe it's HoustonINV.com.
HoustonINV.com.
Yeah. Again, you can get that through the IGBO website as well. IGBO has all the tournaments throughout the United States, whoever's doing one. Most of your major cities have at least one tournament a year. And it's great to see people from all over the place.
All over the country coming.
Yeah, down. We're going up to Oklahoma City Memorial Weekend this year. And so that'll be a fun experience.
A lot of cowboys in Oklahoma City, I would imagine.
We certainly hope so.
There you go. Now, I have to ask, what is your average?
My average has gone downhill as I get older. I'm in the about 150 range.
Oh,
right,
that's good.
Now. My partner, however, is in the 180 range, and he's a few years younger than
me. Yeah,
you
got to hit a couple of strikes in a row to get that. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's for everybody. I mean, we've got bowlers who have a 98 average.
Is that the granny style bowlers that go down and throw it through their legs and they kind of?
Not quite. They try to do it like the rest of us do it.
Yeah.
It's just that they're new and they haven't bowled before. And we encourage new ones to come out and join us because it's all handicap leagues. Now, handicap means that we sort of average everybody out. And so you're not at a disadvantage because you bowl a 98 versus somebody who bowls a 200.
I've never bowled a 200.
I took a bowling class at A&M, and I did break 200 once because you're graded on your average there.
Oh, yeah.
And so you had to do well or you would not make a good grade. So.
I still have my ball in my bag.
Do you have a shiny pink ball?
No, I have a bright red one.
I see.
I've got a red, lipstick red bowling ball.
Now, you mentioned the lanes where these are played.
Yes, the only two lanes that we're using right now is Palace Lanes, and that takes care of four out of the five. And the fifth one's at Del Mar Lanes.
Okay, Palace Lanes.
It's in
that?
Del Air.
Okay.
Just inside the loop.
Mm-hmm.
We do the Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and the women's Monday night.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a difference between the Sunday, Monday? I mean, how are those different? Just the days of the week? Or
just really basically the days of the week. We have a little bit of difference on the Monday night league. It used to be an all-men's league, but we've learned that we need to share.
Diversify.
And so we do have women that bowl on that league as well. And they go by a different kind of point scoring than the others do. Mainly when you bowl on a regular one of our regular leagues, you win or lose the game. Mm-hmm. Individually on Monday night you bowl against another person and you win or lose to that person as well as the game. So
women are so competitive.
So, but anyway, it's fun bowling. It's something that everybody should do because you can do it year-round, and you don't have to be really good at it.
And how long on a typical league night would it be? How many hours?
Normally, if we go in it at 6:30 on Wednesday because it's 5, we're out there by 9:30. So it takes about 3 hours.
But that's not, you know.
But that's 5 people bowling per lane. On Sunday night, when we go in at 7, we're usually out by 9:15. So it depends on the number of people that are bowling. On Thursday night, I understand they go really fast because it's just 2 people on each lane. So it does take some commitment because we do want you to bowl for the whole season.
Okay.
Whether it's just the summer or whether it's year-round or whether it's just the winter, spring.
So if you commit, you've got to be there every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday or every Sunday or whatever you've committed to.
Right.
Again, it's a fun way to meet people.
Absolutely.
And it's just a good group of people. I've thoroughly enjoyed the last 14 years that I've been bowling.
What kind of age mix is it?
Oh, well, most people can't see me, but I'm nearly 70.
No.
Oh, no kidding. Whoa.
And we have say 40.
You don't look that old.
Thank you so much. But anyway, we range from anywhere to early. Well, we've had 18-year-olds. So it's really not age-oriented at all.
Well, wanted to make sure that everybody understood.
It's inclusive age. There's no age discrimination.
There's no age discrimination.
Men, women,
all kinds of people.
Are trans.
Trannies.
We have trans
people.
GLBT.
And we have a couple, and they're wonderful. But they have to bowl just like the rest of us, you know. So
as long as they don't put those heels on.
No, we can't. You can't have heels. You got to be flat.
I know. They threw me off the.
I'm sure Palace frowns upon the heels.
Oh yes.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah.
Got to wear your.
We have a great manager there. His name is David Jay. He's been managing at Palace for as long as I can remember. He did go to Dynamic for a while, but came back to Palace, and he treats the GLBT community just fabulously. So
he appreciates the gay dollar.
Well, as we all do, don't we?
Gay dollar is green dollars.
Well, it's important to have people that are open and friendly and welcoming for every group. John, not for ourselves. We always want to make sure that people are opening, welcoming to us. But, you know, it's nice to know that there are people like that and we acknowledge who they are. Thank you out there.
Exactly.
I think that's part of the benefits of living in a city is you have these kind of individualized events where you can go and experience some
and
portion.
Feel comfortable.
And you don't have to go to a bar.
No.
You don't have to go
And we bowl next to other leagues that are not gay leagues, you know, on Wednesday night and on Monday nights. And so, you know, we mix well with other people.
Yeah, play well with
them. We play well with others, yes. Yeah. Yes.
They don't have, it's the hetero league?
Well, I don't like to use a hetero league or gay league. It's just, they're straight.
they're just different.
They're just different. That's all there is to it. Well, you know, we understand that.
So.
Now, the length of time, how I think we covered it, but how, when was this started? When did it really start?
We actually started in the early 80s.
Early 80s, okay. So
and
we've been around
for quite a while. It started by six guys that wanted to combine the bowlers throughout the United States into an organization, which we now know as the International Cape Bowling Organization. And we celebrated our 25th about 2 or 3 years ago. And we still have some founding fathers in our league here. On Monday night, we have Gerald Hagen, who is the one from Houston that was one of the originators. But we have been around for a long time, and it has grown mm-hmm. from one league now to five. And we'd like to see it continue to grow.
And we want our listeners that are out there maybe sort of interested to... Yeah,
there are a lot of bowlers. I mean, I haven't bowled in many, many years simply because I didn't want to get into a league where I wasn't welcome, quite honestly.
Let me tell you, I get emails all the time because I've been a director, a regional director for IGBO. I served 2 years on that. Tom O'Dell, who's my counterpart, or is the secretary for four leagues, he also was a director for IGBO. One of the things that we try to do is make sure that everybody knows when they email us that they're welcome anytime and that we're open to everybody. And I think in all the years I've been bowling, I've had probably one person who was dissatisfied. And other than that, people have just been really great. And I have got lots and lots of friends, not only here in Houston, but throughout the United States, that I can really truly call friends, because we have great opportunities to meet with them and see them all the time in these different tournaments that we go to. It's fun. A tournament is nothing to be afraid of either, because again, you've got different divisions for different people who have different handicaps and different averages. So it's not the best bowlers getting together and doing their thing.
And my greatest handicap, I can't bowl very well.
I always used to say my handicap was me.
I got that, yeah.
That sounds like a perfect event for those that aren't as athletically inclined as some of the jock guys in the community. I consider myself one. I was never, you know, picked first on any of the sports teams.
Yeah.
But I did like to bowl, and I felt comfortable there. And so I think this is a great opportunity for guys to... Guys and gals, of course, to come out and experience something kind of athletic and fun and kind of bond and have this social atmosphere.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I talk to usually all of the new people who come in, whether they're on Sunday or Wednesday, and let them know that we're a friendly group of people, and that I want to make sure that, and especially when you have somebody that's straight coming in, that they know it's a gay league. And they're usually very open to that. And
they're like, why are all these men so good looking?
Yeah.
And so, the women.
And women.
So, anyway, I would encourage people who would like to have something to do that's indoors where it's cool, come out and try bowling. We'd love to have you. It's a good way to meet other people. And especially if you're not into the bar scene, which, although it's good when you're younger, sometimes when you get a little older, you want to do something different. Bowling is a wonderful way to get to meet people.
Well, bowling's been around a long time. It started as nine pin.
Right.
It's been around a lot longer than softball.
Back in the 1800s.
Yes.
So it's well over 100 years old. We went to New Zealand for one of our tournaments, and they call it nine pin down there still, but it's a lot of fun, and it's great to mingle with people from different
areas. It was started
by
a pirate called Nine Fingers. That's why it's called Nine.
Oh, Jennifer, you're a crack up. Now, if you're out there listening and you are interested in this league, getting involved and becoming social and athletic, guys and girls,
there is a website that you can go to.
Right. And that is Houston Invitational, INV, Houston INV at...
HoustonINV.com.
.com, that's right. Right.
And then there was the national one, which is...
Which is Igbo.org.
Okay.
Don't try the Igbo.com. It's an African organization. So,
so Igbo.org.
That doesn't have anything to do with bowling,
no,
right?
No.
Okay.
And then there's a, I'm sorry, there's an email also.
Yes, the email, either email wikidoo dot AOL.com, or you can do Felton0103 at Yahoo.com. And that's my email address.
And you're giving out your personal email address to our people. So that's
absolutely.
That's your commitment?
That's my commitment.
Absolutely. That's great.
Well, be sure to Wikidoo, spell it again.
W-I-C-C-A-D-O.
Okay.
At AOL.com.
Right. And that's Tom.
That's Tom. Or you can do it at sbcglobal.net. He's on both of those.
Well, Tom, I hope you're listening out there. And for those that are listening that are interested in this, you have the emails and you have the website.
And again, the days that you're playing?
We bowl Sunday night, and that starts at 7 o'clock at Palace. We bowl Monday night. That starts at 9 o'clock at Palace. The women bowl about 8:30 on that same night at Palace. Then we have Wednesday night at 6:30 at Palace. And then Thursday night at... Del Mar Lanes at 9 o'clock. And that's the I Love Lucy Duo.
Uh-huh.
And I Love Lucy Duo?
I Love Lucy Duo. That's what it's called.
Oh, okay. That's cute.
And the winter and spring leagues are now about to end.
Yes.
But the summer leagues are starting.
The summer leagues will start the last part of May.
So.
And again, you can go to either the website, or you can go to Tom or myself, and we can give you the information as to when we're going to start.
We really appreciate you coming tonight.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
All right. This is Queer Voices.
Coming up, an icon of the U.S. movement for LGBT equality reminds us of the true meaning of political power. After we take this Rainbow Minute to celebrate a German trailblazer.
Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld, prominent German activist, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Born in 1868 in Prussia, Magnus Hirschfeld began a career in medicine with an emphasis on human sexuality. He believed sexual orientation was naturally occurring and that laws against homosexuality should be changed for the betterment of society. Hirschfeld founded the world's first organization to end the social and legal intolerance of homosexuals, called the Scientific Humanitarian Committee. He is also credited with amassing a huge number of books, papers, pamphlets, and manuscripts on the subject. He worked to repeal Germany's anti-gay law, paragraph 175. In 1933, Hirschfeld was forced into exile when the Nazis came into power, raided the Hirschfeld Institute, and burned the priceless contents of the library. Regardless, Hirschfeld had effectively defined gay activism for the many that would take up the cause through the course of history. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Tom Miller.
In March of 1978, I took a trip to Northern California to visit friends. I was a volunteer at the time with the gay and lesbian radio show called IMRU on KPFK in Los Angeles, so my hosts arranged an interview for me with their newly elected San Francisco supervisor. Had he lived beyond his first year in office, many believe that his political savvy, street smarts, and obvious charm could have propelled him to even higher electoral victories. An Oscar-winning movie has generated renewed interest in this historic figure. Part of our discussion 31 years ago this month covered local issues and some of the gay personalities of the day. But as you'll hear, much of it still resonates in 2009.
See the way he walks down the street. That's the way he shuffles his feet. What is ever thought about when he goes walking by? He's my guy. When he holds my hand, I'm so proud. 'Cause I'm not just one of the crowd. Why is he the one who's done the things that they have never done? Just because of that, they say.
I'm Harvey Milk. I'm a supervisor in San Francisco.
And I'm Greg Gordon for IMRU.
I'm gay.
And so am I. And we're up in San Francisco in Harvey's office at Castro Camera. And Harvey has graciously taken a few minutes out of his very busy schedule to talk to us about politics in San Francisco and how he got elected, the first openly gay person to be elected to public office in California history.
I'd like to also talk about politics in California rather than San Francisco.
That's fine.
Because I don't think there's a delineation.
You don't think that there's a difference in politics in San Francisco as opposed to, let's say, politics in Los Angeles?
It's a matter of degree. There's no moat built around the city of San Francisco that separates us from the rest. Sometimes we wish there were. but I think what takes place in San Francisco, for whatever reasons, can take place any place. It's just a matter of understanding what it's all about. And San Francisco, it's very interesting because of the fact that I'm gay, that becomes the big media event that sells the newspapers. But it's very important that we realize that I was elected as a candidate who was gay rather than a gay candidate. Did I run on a gay issue? In San Francisco, the difference from L.A. is that we are both county supervisors and city council people, one and the same. The city is divided into 11 districts, and since we are city and county, it's one powerful, very powerful legislative group. You have to picture if your L.A. city council and your L.A. board of supervisors were one and the same, that's what we are. And we are an activist group rather than puppets of the strong mayor or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Or a strong police chief.
Or a strong police chief. We are very, very strong in this city. In the 11 districts that were up for election this past year, there were a total of something like 162 candidates altogether. Of the 162 candidates, of all the, there were 11, not even 11, there were about 7 or 8 who were incumbents who ran. 6, I guess. And exit those out, because they have a record of voting on issues. Of all the other 150-some-odd people, I was probably the most issue-oriented person running. Probably had taken more strong definitive stands, not yes, I'm for that, no, I'm not for that, but why, and been in the battles, than all the other candidates running. Probably more issue-oriented than some of the supervisors who ran for re-election. At least I'm more... And it's vital to know that it took 4 years, 5 years, or whatever it was, to build up that kind of a reputation.
Yes, because you had run for office in the past.
It had nothing to do with running for office. The reason I ran for office because I was issue-oriented. You know, people say, oh, you ran for office, name recognition. No. In my particular district, we've had about 5 or 6 major district battles versus citywide problems. In every one, I was involved in them, on one side or the other. There wasn't one other candidate. There were 17 people running in this district. There wasn't one other candidate who had been involved in every single district problem. I was there. People on the streets would say to me, Harvey, I don't agree with your issue, but I know you're a fighter. I know you're there. I know you will be there when we need you. Let me give you a classic case of this. It's going to be controversial right now. We have a statewide primary coming up, Attorney General. One of the people running for statewide in the Democratic primary is Yvonne Burke.
Mm-hmm.
My heart goes there. She's black. She's a woman. Wham! There I go. But going in Orange County at the Democratic statewide meeting a couple months ago, where they all spoke. Orange County conservative. Orange County. Most of the people there. In fact, I was the only elected official outside of the L.A. Orange County area. So you had basically the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. Yvonne Burke got up and talked about the black people. Talked about women. Great. She sat down. Bert Pines got up and talked about battered wives, what he's done for them, the Latinos, what he's done for them, the blacks, what he's done for them, abused children, what he's done for them, and the gay community, what he's done for them. 3 times in his speech he talked about what he's done for the gay people in front of a very conservative audience. 3 months later, after the campaign trail, and these people have heard each other back and forth, in Sacramento before the Democratic Minority Coalition, which is the traditional minorities, the feminists, and the gay people, they're speaking, knowing who the audience is speaking to. This is now not the conservative wing of the Democratic Party, but the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. They get up, Yvonne gets up and talks about the black issue, about women, sits down, Bert gets up and talks about the same thing. That's the difference. He's done his work. He's paid his dues. He's willing to talk about it. He's an activist. He was involved doing things. She will vote right, but he's been there. A lot of candidates I ran against would vote right, the same as I do. But they wouldn't be the activist. They wouldn't be the advocate. They would be the leader.
I think that's what people are looking for these days, is somebody who will, you know, that's what we're crying out for, up even to the federal government.
Okay,
you know?
Statewide, let's get together statewide. May 5th, I think it's May 5th or May 6th, Sunday. May 6th, I guess it is. Sunday, L.A., we're calling together a statewide caucus of gay people. Convention, blah, blah, but not endorsement. And we're inviting all the candidates for statewide office, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, and I guess secretary of state.
It's nonpartisan?
Nonpartisan. Democrat, Republican, Peace and Freedom, American Independent. We want gay people from all over the state to come. We're sending the letters to these people. We would have this caucus. We're going to say that you have 10, 15 minutes to present your case and then questioning. And we don't want to hear about dams. We don't want to hear about redwood trees. We want to hear about what you think on the gay issues. What you think of that. And then we'll accept questions from the audience, filter them through a panel of gay newspaper people so that someone doesn't get up and do a 10-minute tirade. And I say, hey, right?
Yeah.
Like I do. And they'll be asked questions. If Jerry Brown does not show up, that will be published. If he shows up, what he says will be published. There'll be no endorsements, but we will disseminate the information.
It's a forum, basically.
It's a forum. It's like the black community does. We must follow what the black community does. Black community does this on a national level. All the candidates for Democratic primary for president met before the Black Leadership Forum, or whatever it was called, in North Carolina, and talked about black issues. We must do the same thing in the gay community. We must move out of San Francisco, out of L.A., we must move to California. If you add the gay community with the other traditional minorities, we should have control of the state. But we cannot sit in the back of the bus and let the other minorities lead. We should show the leadership. In fact, we are in an incredible position. You see,
well, let me ask you, are other minorities coming around to realizing that they can and should work with the gay community?
Oh, yeah. Lieutenant Governor Dimley has stuck his neck out for the gay community over and over again. When Willie Brown's sexual bill was before the thing, he flew in from Denver to cast that vote in front of the eyes of the world. So he stuck his neck out there, and he understands working together. He understands the importance of gay people in there. But it's very interesting. Take San Francisco, which is a very heavy minority city. Over 50% of the population is minority. Because of the fighting for those crumbs, sometimes the black community doesn't talk to the Chicano community, the Filipino won't talk to the Asians won't talk to anybody, you know. That. Nevertheless, they all talk to me, the gay person. Partly for two reasons. One, because within the gay community, we have gay Asians, gay blacks, gay, you know, we are infiltrated. That's part of the reason. We cut across the line. Second of all, for whatever reasons, I'm the one that can pull it together. So we are trying very strongly to pull together that coalition. In view of that, we realized, at least I have always realized, is the voter registration. We are kicking off a massive voter registration drive with the Chinese and gay community together soon.
Huh.
You know, there's many reasons for that. Working very tight with the Asian community, very tight. And if we can pull it off here, and if LA pulls it off, if we pull it off statewide, that within 10 years, the minorities will be running the state. And when the minorities, I'm talking about the feminists, I'm talking about the gays included in that. And so we have to fight that. We have to fight with our natural allies. But it can't be just because a person is black or green or gay or orange or whatever it may be. They have to be issue-oriented. Cannot accept somebody to get up there, I'm gay, therefore vote for me.
How do you motivate people to register? Because this is a fundamental problem that we've always had.
Motivate them, say, do you like Ed Davis? Do you like Senator Briggs? Do you like Leader Bryan? You motivate them because it's, you tell them that the legislators and the executive officers, be they the local supervisor, be they statewide, run your life. They run your life and they spend your money. When they collect tax money from gay people and don't give us anything back in return, take it for their golf courses, take our tax money for their pet projects, and give us, and on top of it, insult us by not giving us our rights. That's not motivation. If you like being harassed by the police, if you like being a third-class citizen, if you like being beat up by pugs, if you like the church yelling at you, don't register, don't vote. But don't complain. If you want to be shoved back in your closet, if you want to be the traditional gay person who gets beat up and whimpers home and say, well, I'm gay and I deserve to get beat up, fine. Otherwise, the only thing you can do is register to vote.
What about the reasonably well-off gay couples or gay singles in the hills somewhere who never have had any trouble with the police, who've never, you know, they can say, that's never happened to me.
Right.
You know, why should I get involved? My life is beautiful.
Right. I.e., that reminds me of the wealthy Jews in Nazi Germany when Hitler first was picking up the Jewish communists and Jewish socialism. They were scum. That's not us. We are accepted. You know, we've been accepted. We ride in the back of the bus. It's like the Uncle Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, when Hitler started to have the concentration camp, he didn't care if you were a Jewish socialist or a Jewish fascist. If you were Jewish, you went. When the Briggs and Anita Bryan take over, they don't care if you are the accepted hairdresser or the gay doctor or the gay lawyer or the gay society person. You are gay, you will go off. And if that sounds like a stereotype thing, stop and think. Nazi Germany, what it did to the gay people. There were 600,000 gay people killed. Prior to Hitler's taking over in the 20s, the gay movement in Germany was more advanced than the gay movement in San Francisco in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
There was a statewide, nationwide convention of gay people in Germany, 8,000 gay people. We've never had anything like that here. There were letters written to the Reichstag to tell them to throw out the anti-gay laws. Scientists, doctors, everybody was preaching for gayness and acceptability. In Russia, 1917, they threw out the anti-gay laws. And then Stalin took over. And that was the end of the gay movement. Hitler took over, it's the end of the gay movement. And if you think history doesn't repeat itself, you're crazy. And the only defense about that is it's not just to be organized, but to get involved and to realize who the common enemy is. Unfortunately, within the gay community, we have such a class distinction and racism within the gay community and sexism within the gay community, because some people think they're better than the rest. When it comes down to it, we all do the same thing. And the elitists in the gay community, those who are accepted, those who are the Uncle Toms, those who have sold out, must realize that when the push comes to shove, that if Senator Briggs wins against the gay school teachers, the next thing he may say is, we don't want gay people to vote.
Tune in for the conclusion of this March 1978 conversation with Harvey Milk.
The gay establishment doesn't understand what the gay movement's all about. Gotta get rid of them. And I'm not telling you they're not nice guys. Not nice, wonderful people. I'm not talking about that they're fun people to be with. But if they don't understand what the gay movement's about, you got to get rid of them. And I'll tell you what the gay movement's about.
Next time on This Way Out. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Chris Wilson, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Tom Miller contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride, Rick Watts, and J.D. Doyle. Buena Vista performed some of the music you heard in the landmark 1978 documentary film Word Is Out, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KRZA Alamosa, Colorado, WRUV Burlington, Vermont, CJSF Burnaby, British Columbia, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.
You have been listening to Queer Voices. Heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Polensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
On Sunday, March 29th at 6 p.m., Voices Breaking Boundaries presents Cultural Narratives, a talk with Imran Aslam, the president of the largest alternative media network in Pakistan, Jio, that was closed down for 3 months in November 2007 after President Musharraf declared a state of emergency. With Pakistan on world headline news every day, Imran Aslam will share an incisive alternative perspective of the daily dramas unrolling in Pakistan and South Asia. All this on Sunday, March 29th, 6 p.m. onward at the Station Museum, 1502 Alabama, Houston, 7700. The evening is co-sponsored by KPFT Houston. For more information, go to www.vbbarts.org or call 713-524-7821 for more information. KPFT is now accepting nominations for listener members to its program council. The KPFT Program Council is an advisory body founded to give broader community input in programming. The PC works with KPFT's management around a myriad of programming matters. KPFT is seeking 6 listener members to participate in the program council. Visit kpft.org to apply now and make plans to attend the Wednesday, March 18th local station board meeting to be held at the Haven Center.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.